Family's ready
to accept
that
things
they
that cannot
cannot
change,
change,
courage to change
courage
things
to
that
change
I
what I
can,
can,
and
and the
wisdom
wisdom
to
to
know
know
the
the
difference.
difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand. Somebody will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Oh.
Right. Veterans. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. So keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is the foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And this evening, we're going to be discussing Step 12, Part 2. Please welcome our panel. We have Grace and Sam. All right. So I think Grace is going to kick us off tonight. Giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Grace?
Thanks, Morgan.
Yep.
I'm Grace. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grace.
Sorry, I just had cataract surgery done, and the light, now I see beautifully. I have 20/20 vision far away, but I can't. It's a fog. These lights, I can't see. So I'm staring at you. Sorry for the look. Anyway, I am an alcoholic. I'll qualify real quick. I have a sobriety date. It's August 31, 2011. I have a home group and I have a sponsor, and she knows she's my sponsor. And I sponsor other women. And so I do understand the 12th step. It's interesting. I was thinking about this, overthinking it a little, you know, whether I'm on the giving end or the receiving end of the 12th step. And I've experienced both. So when I read this first part, when Morgan read this first part, and it talked about the second visit to a man, and it also talked about that he's read the book, and is he willing to do what's required? So my experience with being 12 steps, so to speak, was in a rehab, and it was not an Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not my first introduction to the 12 steps. And so nobody, you know, I wasn't, nobody read the book to me except some a counselor in a rehab. And I identified and I grabbed right onto it. And by the time I left that rehab and did what I was told and asked a woman to sponsor me, I sat down and I had this what I call now the vomit session, you know, where you sit down and you tell a bleh, your whole life story like it's a Lifetime movie. And And I said, and I think I'm good. I said, I think the first three steps I've got, and let's just move on to the fourth step. I'm ready to do this thing. And I'm very grateful. She did not argue with me or slam me down. She said, okay. And she let me go on with the steps because I was ready to do whatever it took to first of all, never have to drink again. And secondly, want to live. Because when I got here, it was on a suicide attempt. My experience too with 12-stepping others, and I've had the blessing of getting to go on a lot of 12-step calls, is that I don't see a lot of wet drunks in the meetings anymore. So I got hooked in real quick to going to treatment facilities and whatnot, because what I heard when I got here was I can't keep it if I don't give it away. And I wanted to stay. I wanted what you guys had. And so as soon as I had that time limit that they sort of placed on it, I was going into treatment centers. And so by the time they wind up into the meetings and whatnot, you know, they were drunk. Although I have had the ability to have sponsor a lot of women who go back out, who do the in and out, in and out. And so, this $64 question, you know, to what lengths are you willing to go to stay sober? Everybody except for two women have said to me, I'll do anything. I did have two say, I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm willing to go to any lengths, which is honest. But this, what I do, and I will be perfectly frank with you, I do what the big book says. I tell them to read the first 164 pages. And let me know if they want to do what is required. Then, if they can read that, if they can follow those instructions, then it's time to sit down and meet with them and go through it and tell them what was done for me when I first got here. So, anyway, that's all I got on that. Sam, you're up.
Yep, my name's Sam. I'm an alcoholic. That's for sure. My sobriety birthday is the 3rd of June, 2012. And grateful for this fellowship, man. It saved my life. And I got a home group and a sponsor and all that jazz because it's very important, man. It's like without that, man, that's my lifeline, you know. That's how God shows up in my program quite a bit is through you guys and through my sponsor. If I'm disturbed, there's a disturbance in the force and I can get a hold of my sponsor and I hear his voice, I start feeling better right away. Something happens. It's magical. It's awesome. But anyhow, this 12 step, you know what? First time I went through the 12 steps, I was checking all the boxes, you know? Okay. I love the parts of the book where you know what step you're at. Now we're at step three. It's like I'm checking the boxes. And then when I finally got to step 12 with my sponsor and that, I was like, well, Jesus, man, I've done all the steps now. I must be good. You know what I mean? It wasn't about another year down the road and I was drinking again because I wasn't learning to practice the principles on a daily basis like it suggested at the beginning of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And that upset, because of that and because of not doing these things, the obsession came back for me because I got an alcoholic brain, you know? So, but this 12 step is... It's that part, like Grace said, it's one of those great paradoxes. If I want to keep this thing, I must give it away. And it talks about in the book from the very beginning, in the doctor's story, in the doctor's opinion. And it's reiterated time and day. It's bluntly suggested. And then, you know, it's like, if I want to keep this thing, I got to help other alcoholics. And that's what the second part of 12 step. I wasn't there, but back in those days, I read about in AA's history, you know, when a guy was ready to get sobered up, they'd put him in the hospital, give him the copy of the big book when it was out, and they would let him come out of the fog, and hopefully he's read this volume, and then they make the second visit to him, and hopefully he's read it and ready to take certain steps. When chapter five, I read all the time, is if you're willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take certain steps, you know. And when I was taught by an old timer to do 12 step calls, he taught me out of the third story, AA number three. When they sat down with him, there were four questions they asked that guy. They said, do you want to quit drinking? That's first off, you know. And if you do you think you can quit by yourself again? And man, how many years did I do that? Man, I can control my drinking. I'll learn how to control it. I'll read self-help books. I'll go to whatever other lengths I could go to figure out how I can have a drink like I can see other people with impunity. But and then if they thought, no, I can't, you know, I've gone down that road and I can't. Okay, are you ready to make an approach like on a higher power? Or can you conceive that there's something outside yourself? And that was this third part of like higher power step two, you know, where there's hope. And then to calmly go and trust in that. And higher power for me is a whole sort, all kind of things that all group together. Not only the God of my understanding, but folks from this fellowship is down. That's where I first tasted higher power from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, was through this fellowship. And then when sponsorship started with me, that's when it started being transmitted to me. I know that the first sponsor I had would often remind me, you can't transmit something you haven't got. So the first part of the 12 steps is the step 12 is very, very important, having the spiritual awakening. But if somebody sees something in somebody else, I always tell a new man, I'm one of those guys like, well, I used to be real anxious to go up to the newcomer after the meeting and mob them with the rest of the drunks, you know, trying, hey, welcome, you know, and everything. And then I think I scared away quite a few guys. I think they're like, that guy's a little off or something. I don't know. So I've learned to kind of temper my approach in that and see, let them talk about themselves because they like to talk about it. That's what this suggests. Is he ready to talk about, tell his story? Because I know I'm an alcoholic. I love to talk about myself. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's something about that selfishness, self-centeredness. But if that can happen, then just to have some kind of approach, be approachable, I think, you know. And if you know what, the second part of this is that thing where I'm seeking God's will in my life, and I want to transmit that in some way to the newcomer, and if they see something that maybe I can help them out with, man, I'm willing. Because that's how I'm going to keep my sobriety. When I moved here, the first meeting, I met Grace at this meeting, but I didn't know anybody. And I was like, at this meeting, I told my daughter, I said, I'm going out to meet some new friends. I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and there was a young kid walking in there, and he had a Green Bay Packers jersey on. And I had just moved here from Wisconsin. I'm like, you from Wisconsin, you know? He said, no, I just got out of detox. And I was like, oh, all right. So after the meeting, I snagged that kid and I said, listen, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. And he said, oh, okay. And I would go, he didn't have a car or nothing. I'd go pick him up and we'd go read the book. And that's what was done for me, and that's what I do with men I sponsor. We'd read the book together. And though it didn't last through about step three, he sure kept me sober, that's for sure. And that's why I snagged him, because I knew if I start working with another alcoholic, I was sure to be sober as I made my beginnings in touch, you know, getting plugged into AA around here. But there's something I got to be careful of, and it speaks of it in the second paragraph, is that, and I got a huge ego. And men that I sponsor, I start thinking that I'm doing something for them, like, you know, other than God working, you know, I am the channel. I hope, I pray that I'm that channel of light and love that God, you know, can for them to get their sobriety. But they can't rely upon me, man. Actually, I guess we rely upon each other for that sobriety and for the growth. I rely upon them as much as they do me. But that they have to have these things. Now, listen, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous again, I've been in and out, you know. And it was a failing marriage that drove me back in here, right? And I thought, if I could just have that marriage, if that marriage doesn't fail, now I'm going to do this thing. And I came in here staying sober, and the marriage failed. It was God's will is it's gone, you know. But it sure freed me up for something really beautiful down the road. But but those things that I think are necessary for me to stay sober aren't. My sponsor would tell me, just come and do what we do. If you're supposed to be in this marriage, if it's God's will, nothing will be able to make you part. And I was like, okay, yeah. And he said, just take care of your sobriety. Come and do what we do and everything will be okay. And by God, that's what's happened. That's what's transpired in my life. Just come and do what we do here. And that involves me trusting in the God of my understanding above all other things. That everything is probably included in that, you know, especially the fellowship and my sponsor and that. But that's been my experience. And man, I'm great. I'm so grateful for it. You know, life's really good just from going out to say, I'm going to make a few new friends. And then it turned into what I'm living day by day. So I guess that's all I got on that part.
Thank you, Sam. Sure.
Thank you both. All right. We're going to be continuing on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Very good.
Well, I think that sounds like wishful thinking. Not my experience, I have to tell you. It was something to shoot for, though. When I got sober, my kid's father had killed himself a year prior. My extended family were barely owning my existence, and my four children. I was a mother of four, three of which I had given away. One wouldn't leave, and I did have a dog. And a cat. But anyway, it sounds great. You know, I mean, I tell you what, I did not put anything before my recovery. Sometimes selfishness and self-centeredness can work to your advantage. And I read in theory, you know, just putting the drink down is but a beginning. Well, I thought it was a good one. And that's where we started. And I was homeless when I first got sober. I say homeless. I was living in a hotel that charged by the hour for some. And we smuggled in the cat and the dog, you know. We were asked to leave eventually because of that. But, you know, at any rate, we finally did get a home. I moved in across the street from my sponsor. Key is here. I had a sponsor. And I started following some directions, hers mainly, and things started getting better. But this was a very slow process with, you know, my kids that were really the only relationship I had left. And they did not have to practice these principles that I thought so highly of and was shocked that they weren't getting it. And there was a lot of rub and a lot of friction. Something that that Sam's, you know, it when it said here the domestic problems, there may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. And we sort of touched on it before. You know, the when I sponsor other people, I'll tell you, because I came in with no intact relationships to speak of, except my children. I was a mother, that was it. But when I sponsor other people, you hear it all the time. Most people, and I'm sure I did it too, I wanted to get stop drinking so that I could get things back, so that I could have what I thought would make me better or make me okay. I think the biggest crux of it for me was I didn't know what was really good for me when I got here. I really didn't know. You know, they used to say, just stay until the miracle happens. Well, my miracle was just give me more money and a man and I'll be good. I'll be good. You know, when Sam talked about him meeting me in a meeting, it was a meeting in Chesapeake, bless his heart. We're married now, if anyone knows. We got married this past year, but I 13 stepped him all over the place. He's sitting there fresh as a baby in white snow, just showed up in here, and I've been around a little bit, and I walked in and I never laid eyes on him before, and I did that, you know, the double taking. If y'all say you don't, you know you do. And he's trying to 12-step this poor soul right out of rehab. And I'm like, hi, I'm Grace. Got right between them. Some of us are still not right. But this was a long time. This was a long time. I've been sober a long time. And, you know, I know for sure that if I had still had all those other things when I got here, I don't think I would have stayed sober. I don't think I would have. I don't think I would have had. I would have been distracted by the things that I thought I wanted back. Everything for me was gone. I had given it away. I didn't lose it either. I gave it away. And so when I'm trying to connect with another woman who says she's an alcoholic, and that's her job to say she's an alcoholic, you know, to what lengths are we willing to go? These domestic problems, even once we put the drink down, I'm still there. That was the crux of it. Once I put the drink down, and the worst part, the scariest part, like for my children, the only relationships that were left standing by the time I got sober, they didn't know how to deal with me without a drink. And so I think they were probably just as shaky, if more so than I was. Because I had y'all. I had a sponsor. I had the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had somebody supporting me, reassuring me. They didn't have, all they had was the memory of what I was like and what they were used to. And, you know, I think back about that. Here I am 14 years later. And some of that, those relationships, you know, they're still a work in progress. So I don't know. I probably sidetracked that whole paragraph, but what's new? Anyway, thanks.
Sam alcoholic. Just to set the record straight, when I was talking to Grace, I had my spidey senses on that fella. And I told Grace, I'll talk to you later. It was nice to meet you. And I went and grabbed that.
Lightly.
That's what I told him. Listen, I'm gonna be your temporary sponsor. I've only done that twice, and one's worked out. So, but I do have a lot of experience with this domestic thing, and I've burned through two marriages and one long-term relationship because of my drink and my alcoholism, and those poor women bore the brunt of a lot of I was the tornado, just like the book said. So that last one, when things were shaky and I was just relying on what my sponsor was telling me about what I should do. And he impressed upon me. That's what I love when sponsors, they just burn the idea into every band. Well, one of his things that he burned the idea to me is to avoid fault finding and argument like the plague, you know. And I'd be, all right, Dick. And that's what I did. I remember during that time, and you know, I was in the middle of my fourth step and everything, but there came a phone conversation where she was elsewhere, and she called, and over the phone, she rattled off like my freaking fourth step to me, you know? And I was like, and I knew from his good sponsorship to be quiet and listen, just to be quiet and listen, and to see the truth in what I was hearing. You know, there was a lot of truth there, and that I should not, because my inclination is to defend myself, man. It's like the self-preservation, but I practice restraint. I practice great restraint. And to do that, I think what tremendous spiritual growth that is in a person when we get to that point, when we realize right in that moment we're doing it, you know. But and things didn't work out like I kind of jumped the gun, but you know what, in God's will, things worked out just right. But I want to go off topic a little bit about that too, because in the amends process, my amends with my ex did not go well at all. And I didn't follow my sponsor's guidance on this, you know. I did it when I wanted to do it, and it did not go well. But over a period of time, man, I'm telling you what, I held great, great, great resentment. Great resentment. I mean, when they said, you need to pray for this woman, I prayed for her every day. I prayed that a meteorite would fall from the heavens and destroy it. You know what I mean? And I meant this in my heart, you know? And that was the reason. I would tell people, and I would feel better after saying it. I'm being honest with you. But over a period of time, there came a point where there was forgiveness on my side and on her side of that chain that bound us, that resentment. And because of that forgiveness, there was freedom given on both sides. And that was a beautiful thing to experience. And it took a lot of time. So I had to practice a lot of patience. But thank God for that, man. That's one of the miracles of this program. And I think it freed me up emotionally for another relationship, a beautiful relationship. I'm sponsoring a guy right now going through the same sort of thing, and I can convey my experience to him. And I haven't the slightest idea what God's will is in his life. I just know that if we sit back and seek God's will and be willing to do whatever action there is that's before us, that everything will turn out okay. And I can't wait to see what happens, because I know it's going to be great. And I get to watch, you know what I mean? And it's, I just got to sit back and get some popcorn and get a little extra
vegan butter
on and watch the show, because God's got this thing. I just got to be willing to do whatever it is. That's all I got on now. Thanks.
Thank you,
Sam.
All right. Continuing on, we are on page 100.
Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
God, doesn't that sound good?
Yes, sure does.
You know, I heard that when it first started resonating with me, first year, let's say, You know, I wanted that and I wanted that right then. I didn't realize, I couldn't see that I was doing it. I was, because I was going to meetings every day, because my phone conversations were 99% of the time with other alcoholics. That I, you know, lots of, I had met so, my world had grown, my world had gotten so small as a practicing alcoholic, you know, and all of a sudden, within a very short amount of time, I wasn't afraid. It had just expanded so much. And I was walking, me and the new man, you know, I was the new person, but I was walking, I was. And it was working. Remarkable things were happening. It's amazing, thinking about that now as someone who wanted to die, as someone who wanted to die. I mean, I really did. I was perfectly good with it and had been for a long time and was willing to do what it took to make that happen. And that went away really quick without me even noticing it. Once I got here and started doing this thing. And this 12th step, which is so huge. My first sponsor told me, and I was probably 35 days sober. She said, I want you to go introduce yourself to any new woman in a meet. I was going to meetings everywhere. Any meeting you go to, if you see a woman that you don't recognize, I want you to go introduce yourself to her. And I'm like, why would I do that? You know? And she said, because I told you to. And I said, okay. And she said, that's 12-step work. That's 12-step work. And I want you to get a service position with your home group so you can start giving away, giving it back, being there and starting to learn. And so I did that. And, you know, I was starting to learn how to be responsible and accountable. And I started to have some integrity, and all these things started, remarkable things started happening. But this higher power thing for me, I got to be real frank, you know, for a very long time, I never disputed the presence of God. But, you know, I certainly didn't understand reliance on it or even a constant awareness of it. And that has taken time. And in the beginning, it was my sponsor. It was Alcoholics Anonymous. It was you guys. You guys certainly knew things I didn't know. And I was in a state of reasonableness that I listened. I wasn't being a know-it-all. I wasn't following everything said to me with, I know. You know what I mean? It's hard. My sponsor busted me on that one a couple years ago. She said I called her for whatever reason, what the reasons we call our sponsors. And I guess I was going, she's talking and I'm saying I know. And she slammed me and she said, if you know, what do you need me for? Now I don't know what to say. So I called someone else to complain about my sponsor.
Yeah.
And she said, right? That happened to me one time. So now I say, okay. Anyway, this is both you and the new man. I, you know, I don't know what my life would be. It wouldn't be what it is today if it weren't for other alcoholics. My willingness, my want to help somebody else was all about me. Because I heard it. I heard, I can't keep it. I can't stay sober unless I help somebody else. It's been pointed on. I can't give away what I don't have. You know, I didn't have a whole lot in the beginning. I had the capacity to talk a lot. I can talk. And so that has come in handy. I could give that away. What I've learned to do a lot of the last several years is listen. Is listen. I think God is this God is showing me not only what I can give away, but what I need to receive. through the work, the practice of the 12 steps. And that means that there's two parts to it. One is carrying the message, and the other is practicing these principles in all my affairs, which is probably the hardest half of that. At least it requires the most effort on my part. Donald and I were discussing that earlier, and I always chuckle because he gets it, and it's real and it's honest, and that's practicing the principles. Anyway, thanks, Sander.
Sam, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, practicing principles in all my affairs. That's a tall order. It alluded to it in the previous reading, but to practice them in my home life, that's a tall order, man. You know, it's easy to go to the meeting and practice our principles in here and talk this talk. And we got to convey ideas. It's an important part, I think, of recovery and our fellowship. But when I go out that door, that's when I need to practice my principles, you know. And that's when it comes, that's where the tire meets the road. I tell men that are looking for sponsors, I say, well, you can't watch people. God's going to put somebody in your path. I'm certain of this. It's happened to me every time. It's always been the right man. Last time I was looking for a sponsor when I came back into this, I approached like four or five different men. And nobody was sealing the deal with me. I'm like, what's going on, man? You know, but then one night I just had this feeling in the right guy, and we shook hands and I showed up at his house, and he was the great guy with the experience that I needed. But I tell these guys, watch how these men, if you see somebody that's got a light around them, you pay attention to them, see what they're saying. And then you watch, see how they're walking their walk. Cause you know, that's what's important. How are they living their life in sobriety? And if that's something you want to go up and ask that guy, go ask him to be your sponsor and get it going. Get the recovery train on the track is what I was told. And that's what I tell them. This thing, do you know, sometimes in my walk, there's great disturbances in the forces, right? But then there's other times when I feel like I'm in the perfect will of God right here and right now, whatever it is I'm doing. Those things crop up with me when I'm walking out of a jail or a prison meeting, every single time. Those things crop up with me when I'm getting done with sitting down for an hour with the sponsee, every single time. Those things crop up with me when somebody calls up and I'm in the middle of something. I might be cursing. I might be beating on car parts or something. And they call up and I got to pay attention to them for a while. And I'm like, oh, I feel better, you know. And I go back and the part just slips right in for some reason. And I'm trying to beat it with a hammer. You know what I mean? That's the things that start happening. I feel like I'm in the perfect will of God. I think that is because I'm walking step 1, 2, 3, where I'm taking my will and I'm lining it up to God's will, however I conceive that God of my understanding. I'm just trying to line it up. And when it happens, man, I just know it. There's new power that starts flowing in every single time. And that's what I think this is happening. I love the part where it talks about my plans. And when those plans don't come about, then, you know, there's this. But the things that really do happen are far greater than anything I could have ever planned. And I sit, if you ever come to our house, it's a slice of heaven and it's a recovery house. And people, when they come there, I hope they experience the presence of God there. And I can sit out there and I'm like, how did the, you know, I just moved here 6 years ago. How did I end up here? How am I in this beautiful spot with this beautiful, this woman has created heaven on earth? And I'm like, and the birds and the squirrels and the spiders, and they're all coming around, you know? And I'm like, I know, you know how I wound up here? I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I stopped seeking my will and start seeking God's will. I just started surrendering, you know. It's that the principle of the honesty of the first step, the principle of there's hope in the second step, and faith starts weaving its way in there. And then there's this surrender thing, and I'm giving up. I'm quitting fighting. And what's, okay, God, what's next, man? What is going to go on next? And then the best things that can happen for me start to happen. I don't have to have any control. They just come. They just come. And it's the I don't like magic. It's the mystery of this thing. It's the real mystery of sobriety in my life, you know. And I've learned it through these steps and the principles of those steps. I'm still, it's always ongoing. It's never something that's historic. It's done. It's always ongoing. And that's what I think of when I'm in the now. This is never going to end, this now. Never, ever, ever. That's all I got to say on that. Thank you.
That's enough. Thank you.
Our next reading is also going to be on page 100. What do you know?
We do know.
Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. We have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcoholic at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol.
You know, I wish I could tell you that I just walked Pat down the liquor aisle somewhere and it jumped down my throat. Just magically. Jump down my throat. That is not what happened. The obsession to drink for me was removed without my even awareness of it. I'm in awe of that because thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't want to drink. That's the key. All the 12 steps. I mean, I'm capable of white knuckling it for sometimes a long time. I did it for almost 15 years. I did not drink as an alcoholic for 15 years. I was miserable. I did some other things to help ease my pain and comfort. but since I've been here doing all of the steps, the ones in the middle. I don't want to drink. I can dust liquor bottles. I can serve people. I can go pour someone something and it doesn't, I don't like salivate or want. It's crazy to me. That is a miracle because I'm an alcoholic. And that's what I do is drink. But thanks to these 12 steps, I don't want it. And, even when I'm not spiritually fit on some days, when, you know, I'm just irritable and discontent. I have a solution for that that doesn't require alcohol. And that is those in-between steps. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it was for free. It was free. And people showed me how to do it so they could stay not drinking and happy, joyous, and free. It's crazy. I mean, where else? I've been an alcoholic since I was 12 years old. I drank alcoholically at 12. And I didn't find this until I was 51. It wasn't hiding from me. I just didn't show up in front of me. And so I don't worry about, I don't want to take his story, but I come from a family of hard drinkers. That's what we call them, right? Because we can't call them alcoholics. Hard drinkers, you know, they drink and they do it. They do it successfully. They like still keep their jobs and shit, you know, and they don't wind up in jail. Well, they do, but they don't stay long. And, you know, and they don't count marriages and they don't count funerals and they don't count car accidents and stuff like that. But anyway, Sam and I went to, it was a nephew of mine. He was getting married and, yeah, there was the booze. It was beautiful. It was a very high end wedding, and you know, booze was flowing. And my, they were doing what they do. And my sister came up to me right before the reception started, and she put her hands in my face, and she said, "Now I've been sober a while at this point," and she says, "Behave." Like, what the hell? But in hindsight, she had good reason, because there had been other times when that would have been a pertinent thing to say to me. But anyway, we sat there and we just, you know, there was all the glasses in front of us for all the different variations of alcohol that would be poured during the different courses and all of this stuff. And we had our bubbly water and club soda, and that was it. And we had a great time. And it did not... we danced, we did whatever everybody else was doing, and it didn't occur to us. So yeah, that it's a bloody miracle that when I practice all of the 12 steps, and I got asked to speak, I think it was a week ago, at a panel in Ocean View for a great home group. I didn't realize it had been around 78 years. Oh my God, in the same place. But it was on the three legacies: unity, recovery, and service, or recovery, unity, and service. Anyway, and that, when all three of those things are firing for me, which is the 12 steps, you know, the traditions, all of this, I don't think about drinking. I don't even think about it. But I need them all. I need them all. And that's how I stay spiritually fit. And that's why I can go anywhere. That's why I can go anywhere. Nobody has to hide the booze from me, you know, or their purse or anything else. I react sanely now. I react sanely. And when I don't feel sane, you probably won't know it, because I have a different solution. And it's those in-between steps. It's those principles. Because white knuckling, it sucks. Trying to pretend I'm okay sucks. And I can only do that for so long. And being that I'm an alcoholic, I don't know what kind of alcoholic y'all are, but for me, I know I'm either going to want to kill myself or take a drink. And all I got to do is the rest of the, do the stuff. So yeah. We can go anywhere, and I can go anywhere to help another alcoholic. I can do that. And I can also say no when it's not safe to go anywhere just because somebody needs it. I never do 12-step work alone. I don't go into the middle of somebody's house where there's a drunken brawl trying to talk to some woman who's, you know, I don't know. I take another woman with me. I was taught that. That was 12-step work 101. You don't do it alone. And if I do start to try and do stuff by myself, I might want to check myself, because I can't get anyone drunk and I can't get them sober. I need help. Thanks.
Thanks. Sam, alcoholic. Yeah, so... step 12, beginning of it, having had a spiritual awakening. And if you're a newcomer, I don't suggest you go anywhere around alcohol. Not until that spiritual awakening happens. Because that's what gives me, not the ability, but Like Grace was talking, we were at that, not man, wedding receptions were licensed for me to get plowed. And I hope that the same was for you too, because I love going to a wedding reception. But this reception we went to, and the idea never crossed my mind. I'd had such a good time with everybody. And then I realized we were reading 84 through 85 at the jail one night. And the guy was in there and says, this has happened for you, man. He said, you were just talking about it. I was like, yeah, I had a huge epiphany. I was like, yeah, and I love that's, you know, that's one of those things where I think I'm writing a will of God in my life. But to realize that, and I didn't even have to focus or think about it, it just happened because I'm doing this thing. It's there, you know. My alcoholic brain, because I've been in the spot at, you know, the first go with Alcoholics Anonymous after doing the 12 steps and being around bars, I decide, well, I'm safe to go to a bar. But my mind was not in good spiritual condition. It was not spiritually fit. And let me tell you what, it wasn't but a few more months down the road when I decided maybe it'll be all right if I take another drink. That's what I'm talking about. So the first part of this step is essential. Going to these sordid places, I don't even think about it anymore. And if there's 12 step to work to be done, I mean, I go there by the grace of God and another alcoholic. We were at a great meeting on, we went to Big Island, Hawaii, and we were at a beach meeting. And there was this old timer from around L.A. We were talking about Chuck Chamberlain. Now he says, "Yeah, I knew Chuck." And well, during this meeting, he talked about a story of 12-step work over in Northern Ireland. And he said this man went over to talk, and all I could surmise from this share is that he's talking about Chuck Chamberlain going and asked to be spoke. And they took him out to do some 12-step work in Northern Ireland over in. You know, they would team up. Catholic and Protestant. And you remember in those days that where they were killing each other, deadly enemies. But where there was an alcoholic, whether it be in the Catholic part of town or the Protestant part, they teamed up and they went on that errand to go carry the message and never had a worry. Never had a worry, man. And he said it was just freaking awesome, you know. That's what this thing's talking about. I just know that I'm just, I don't know, protected or whatever. Yeah, I think I'm safe and protected. I don't know. I know I can tell you this. I can walk down the, I'm a wino man. And I can walk down, sometimes when I go to Harris Teeter, the line wraps back through the wine aisle. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, look at all these bottles of wine. And I'm like, dang, man, they didn't have all this stuff when I was drinking. And I'm like, they're really pretty, you know? And so I'm going through, but the idea that I need to get one of these bottles of wine never crosses my mind. I saw this one bottle and it showed this guy, you know, those old guys with the big handlebar and he had on, it's like a skin thing, like a muscle man. You know, like one of the things that wrap up one way. And he's holding a dumbbell over his hand. It was on the front of a bottle of wine. I said, that's me, man. That's how I feel when I'm drunk on wine. It's perfect. The name of the bottle was Freak Show. And I'm like, that's me.
That's it. There we go. Wrap this shit up.
What's the miracle in Alcoholics Anonymous? The miracle for me is my alcoholic mind doesn't respond like that anymore. Yeah. Doesn't mean I have to go and be a part of the freak show anymore. I can be a part of the sanity show. I can be grounded in sanity. The sanity would be restored. It promised me that in step two. And so that's what's this great thing. Having had the spiritual awakening, I can go anywhere. If I'm spiritually fit, and I begin in my morning, I hit my knees first thing out of bed. I hit my knees. So I need to plug into power greater than me. And then I ask God, show me what you need me to do today and give me power to carry it out. Because I of myself, I'm powerless. And then I stand by. Then I'm waiting for tasking. I'm ready. Okay, what's going to come next? And then if there's somebody, I like what the paragraph said a little bit back there. Is Dr. Bob's prescription of staying sober is trust God, clean house, and the third part that it didn't say is help others. And there it is. If I boil down the 12 steps, I think into the nutshell, Dr. Bob's prescription to stay sober is contained right in there. And there are all the 12 steps if I want to just make it real simple, and I got to keep it real simple too. So that's what I try to do. And I just wait. I wait on God. I try to be still and know that God is God, and that what does He need me to do, but that I can respond to it, right? That I can respond when it does come, because it does. It's gonna come. You're good. If you're seeking after this thing instead of going and seeking something to drink, well, something's gonna happen, man, and there's gonna be great things come around. It's promised there at the end of the 164 that there's going to be great things happen for you and for me, and we're gonna if we abide in this. I have to do it. I found out I had to do this thing because for me the other way never worked. For me the other way was a life of misery. I'm the youngest of a bunch of kids, eight kids, and I was taught when my mom and dad split up, I was taught to drink by my then older three brothers, and I drank like they drank. All three of them are dead from the disease of alcoholism, and it's only by God's grace that I find myself here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Only by God's grace. But through this, you're carrying that grace. And through this today, I know tonight I got a 99.9% chance I'm going to be a sober man when I hit my pillow tonight. And I'll thank God for that. And in the morning when I get out of bed, I'm hitting my knees so I can get plugged back in. That's what I do. I'm grateful for the opportunity to come here and to share the message. It's a wonderful thing. And I hope if you're a newcomer, welcome. Keep coming back. If you're out there in Zoom and you want to get plugged in, do it. Don't hesitate, because a lot of people are here ready to shake your hand and welcome you. So thank you for letting me share. And I pass.
Thank you. Yep. We'll hang out up here with y'all all night. But unfortunately, we are out of
We are out of time.
All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the General Service Office remains self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? I have a wonderful AA-related announcement right here. 1 week from today, in this exact room, because tonight we just finished going through all 12 steps by our normal panel format. So next week, we're going to be doing a supper and a speaker. Big, wonderful, awesome event. Supper means dinner. It's going to be a potluck, which means please bring a dish if you can. That would be great. If everybody brings something, we don't fall short on the food. It's a wonderful time. The speaker is going to be Jack D from Baltimore, Maryland. 6 p.m. will be food. 7 p.m. will be speaker. Jack will tell his story. There are these beautiful seasonal pumpkin flyers that I'm holding in my hand right over there on that literature table.
please take them to your groups, take them anywhere. Do me a huge favor. Just make sure that stack's not there. Take them to whatever group you're going to this week. Just offload them everywhere you go. Yeah. Any other announcements? Gary's got one first.
Hey, Gary.
I'm going to bring some food, too.
Yes, you are.
Our annual gratitude breakfast will be Saturday, November the 8th. We'll start with breakfast at 9, and there's a 50-50 raffle, among other things. So we'll wrap it up at 12 o'clock. So please come and join us. Thanks.
Thank you, Vicki.
Ben?
Been an alcoholic. Between those two amazing dates is a Thursday meeting. November 6th, Laura H. is a founding member of Downtown Young and Sober. It's Downtown Young and Sober's 21st anniversary. Meeting starts at 7, meeting starts at 8. Thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm a double dip. This is Vicki again. Forgot to tell you guys, it's the gratitude breakfast is going to be at Bayside Presbyterian Church.
Sweet. I would have never guessed. All right. Don't make me laugh. All right. Literature is available right over there on that table with those lovely orange flyers that you should take with you to your groups. See a home group member if you would like to purchase a book. If you can fold it, it's free. Also, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Yeah, see any of them if you'd like to purchase some literature. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. You can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net if you are too shy. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are encouraged and invited to join us for fellowship. Be at Cafe Stella, just up Colonial Avenue on your left-hand side. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel.
Thank you.
Thank you. After the Lord's Prayer, please feel free to come thank Grace and Sam up here in front. Oh, it looks like everybody's standing up already. I was going to let David read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Here's your hat. What's your hurt?
Good.
Yeah.
We're out of here.
Hey, everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you very much. You. Now we have a nice way of closing.
Oh, no,
I know. It's so tough. Whole 5 minute back
rate. Right. Keep talking after the hour.
Right? I know. Quick moment of silence followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
Lord, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Go ahead.